great. What we do is we have these informal conversations every 2 weeks. The next one will be February 8th. And sometimes people can make it. Sometimes they have a meeting. But we send post-session notes out to everyone and announcements of the meetings and so that people could keep up with what we're doing. Why don't we get a briefing? Of course, one of the things that we track. Someone just joined?
Yeah, hi, Mike. George Papendorf, New Jersey.
Hey, George. How are you?
Hey, great. George.
Hi, Ro. Hi. Hi, Glo.
One of the things we do at these informal meetings is we put people like George, who has been with the program about a decade or so, and that's literally a decade.
Mm-hmm.
He started in 1998.
Correct. Yes.
And together with people who are just starting and people who have been dipping their toes in the water, like Millie and
hi, Paula Paris, Driveway Networks, Boston.
Hey, Paula.
Hi,
we have we've got a lot of old dogs on the phone here. We got George here too. Hey, Paula,
yes.
How are you?
Hey.
Paula is with OAI, and she's been in. They've been in the program for about as long as George, about a decade or so.
Yes.
One of the things we like to do is put mentors like George and Paula in touch with people who have just started or have new programs or are thinking of developing programs, and talk about issues that concern them in terms of training and the helpful hints for people who are starting new programs or have one or two cycles under their belt. And then, of course, one of the primary things that's going on is this new RFP, and there will be a RFP issued. And one of the things we do, while we're very focused on how to develop a good, sustainable program, it is interesting that EPA has kind of adopted many of the same things we talk about. In fact, almost all of the things we talk about are the same things they evaluate the grants on. So we basically follow pretty much the track of the response of the RFP in our discussions of all of the factors that make a program sustainable. And EPA has been very foresighted in asking of their proposal submitters exactly how they're going to do their project. And it so happens that those are all of the things you need to have a good, sustainable program. So that if you could actually write a well-written, detailed proposal, you're pretty much, and if you can implement that as it's written, you're pretty much guaranteed a successful program and also more likely to get the grant. Now, I'm going to have, let's get an update. GLO is our chief liaison with EPA, and perhaps you can give us an update on the elusive RFP.
Yeah.
Well, my last update is from last Tuesday. I had heard from Joe Barossa headquarters. On Tuesday the 17th, he sent me an email, and he said that they hope that it's out next week, which would be this week.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he didn't say what day, if it was going to be at the beginning of the week or the end of the week, but
right.
I do know that as soon as it comes out, he will let me know right away, and I've heard nothing yet. But it's only Wednesday, so.
Mm-hmm.
No, EPA is, and we can beat up on them. We don't allow them to be on these calls, so we can speak openly. But we have to also give them their due. They go over RFPs with fine tooth comb, their request for proposals. And there are also many policy issues that they have to deal with when they're issuing this RFP. This was originally going to be out in November,
mm-hmm. Yes.
With probably a due date about now, but it was delayed because they were getting their assessment and cleanup grants back, and they were short on staff. And I think the same people are involved in all of these programs. So there was that personnel delay, but then also these go through many layers of review and issues. Also, there's some things going on in this last year that we got hints of last summer about some potential changes. Usually these programs they started in 1998, but if you look back at the RFPs,
mm-hmm.
they've evolved very slowly over the years, and we've
yes.
probably seen the biggest change in the last year, where they've upped the grant to $300,000,
mm-hmm.
and the bigger issue is they're looking at bringing in additional programs, water, perhaps urban agriculture, perhaps air. We're not sure about air. But so these have a lot of implications, and they're also broadening it, somewhat moving away from strictly training people that will be assigned to a specific brownfield site,
mm-hmm.
as the old grants were, to more realistic in terms of training environmental positions that will work in communities that also have brownfields. So
yes.
it's a slight difference, but it's kind of major, as George and mm-hmm. Paula would say. It's a slight difference, but there are some major issues, because the brownfields bill that this is funded under specifically states that these are training for brownfields. So I'm sure they're going
yes.
through a lot of internal issues of can they really broaden the program,
mm-hmm.
how much can they broaden it, and those type of things. So,
yes.
But I expect that they'll release it. And Joe doesn't really have a lot of control over this. It's out of his hands at this point. At some point,
mm-hmm.
they'll review it, and then it'll pop out, and you all will be the first to know as soon as
yes.
we see it's issued. But bear with us, and it should be out any minute or any day now. I think the interesting things that are going to be occurring will be, one, how broad is it going to be? Are we going to be talking about water? Are we going to be talking about air and urban agriculture? How many of the other program offices are coming in? Are we really going to be talking about wastewater, which is a huge program?
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to be de-emphasizing energy? And perhaps not, because there's the relationship between energy and environment is directly there, but there's a lot of funding and work being done by other agencies as far as weatherization goes. So there might be some, on the fringes, there's going to be some issues that'll be interesting to see when the RFP comes out. Are we going to want to focus or not focus at all on weatherization, for example?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Are we going to want to go into wastewater treatment plant operators, which is a huge undertaking? Those kind of things we'll find out. We'll also find out if they're going to keep the $300,000 for 2 years, or if that'll go up or down
mm-hmm.
because of budget cuts. So
yes.
we're not exactly sure. We do know that it's a pretty strong supported program. They seem to indicate to us last summer that it may not be huge because the agency is under a lot of economic pressure, but we'll find that out in the next couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
So now, George, are you thinking of applying? George is up.
No, we're interested in taking a look at it also when it comes out, Mike. We've locked in resources to run a round of training. We'll do another 25 or 30. With the OSHA 40-hour, the regular brownfields job training. And then we also have funding to do the 8-hour refresher, probably for 40 or 50 of our people from past years.
George, while we've got, because
yeah.
you're here, and could you explain to some of the people what you've done? George and Paul is from Boston, and George is from New Jersey. They're two different programs, and both extremely
mm-hmm.
successful. And when we have you both on the line, could you explain kind of the history? George is really one of our stars. He's a superstar. He started out with this program and has basically doesn't need the program anymore. We need him more than he needs us. He has launched a tremendous program. Could you give us a quick summary of your what happened to you and
Our main operation is a program called New Jersey Youth Corps, and we work with youth that have dropped out of high school. Between 16 and 25, and we have 11 sites throughout New Jersey, and historically we work with about 11 or 1,200 young people a year. And out of our graduates, we'll select at least 60 to go through the brownfields job training. And we've been doing this since 1998 when the EPA first announced the training grant. And over the years, we've got I think six of the EPA grants. And initially and still now, EPA always recommends and would like to see programs continue with the training but become sustainable. And I think, Mike, we're one of the few programs that have been able to do that. And we have run a brownfields job training every year, sometimes two or three times a year since 1998. I joke with my program directors. We sort of lost track exactly how many programs we've run, but it's a lot. And we've looked for money in various sources. We've gone out to other departments in New Jersey. Department of Labor has been very generous to us. There's another organization, our State Employment and Training Commission. We've been working the last 3 years with money we've received from them. Also with our Youth Corps dollars, often we're able to come up with maybe $200,000 or $300,000 from Youth Corps dollars to run a program. But we haven't come up short yet, and we have the money locked in to this year.
Now, are all these programs like into one pot? Do you kind of treat it as one program with funding from these various organizations? Could be the labor or Youth Corps or state.
We can't mix the dollars. I mean, we have to run separate budgets, but I mean, they can all go toward the same goal of running a brownfields job training program. We've the last 2 years we've been able to get money once the kids graduate. We've got some money for internships. Last year and this year we had $100,000 for internships, and that helps getting them placed. The way that works, we allocate $4,000 to each one of our graduates, and that's we figure $10 an hour times 40 hours a week for 10 weeks.
And that goes to the employer, or it goes to the...
No, that would go to the employer. Usually we try to go 50-50 with the employer.
Mm-hmm. So the employer would hire them, but
yes.
This would act as a supplement to their salary?
Correct, yes.
Oh, excellent. So it'd be a hiring incentive.
Yeah. Usually the way it works, we will go ahead and reimburse the employer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that goes for how long, did you say?
10 weeks. We've allocated $4,000per graduate, and we have enough money for 25 graduates. And usually it goes longer than 10 weeks because not everybody's hired at $20 an hour.
If
they're at $15 or $16 an hour, we'll go ahead and pay half of that.
Right.
And then for however long the money will carry it out.
Yeah. And how about insurance and benefits and things? Is that picked up by the employer?
By the employer, yes.
Oh, excellent. Yes. Do you find that they usually hire them after that internship?
I think, Mike, I would say that 50% or better get hired, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody. Right. I mean, there's no guarantee. It's,
right.
But in most cases,
yeah. Now, how about organized labor? Are these non-union, or now you're kind of in an organized labor community?
We are, but these are non-union jobs.
Oh, okay.
And New Jersey really does not have a labor union for the environmental tax.
Oh, really?
No.
So you're really not too active with organized labor then?
No, I oversee recently a number of apprenticeship programs, but nothing that really is specifically for an environmental tech.
Now I'd like to flip over to Paula. Are you Paula?
Yes.
Now you're a little bit different program. Paula is down the road a little bit there, or up the road in Boston. And now you're fairly organized labor, aren't you?
Actually, no. We're not. We have no relationship with organized labor at this present time. Which is not to say that we're not interested, but a lot of the jobs here are not unionized jobs. So, And we're not a public entity. We're a private nonprofit. So our strategies are a little bit different. Right now we're poised to, you know, we're lining up our partnerships. And over this particular year, we have established a firm partnership agreement with another nonprofit that does really excellent reentry services.
Mm-hmm.
So we will be taking probably 10 people out of a program that from their end is supported by Department of Labor grant specifically for reentry services.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an open RFP right now, and they're applying for another year. And the, you know, these are they're like maybe 15 grants nationally. So and you know, they've won it consistently 2 years in a row, but they were looking for someone to partner with because there's an emphasis on job you know, on job training and placement. And we have found here that a criminal background is not a total deal breaker. We also have a slightly older population. Our average participant is 30, which is not to say that we don't, you know, our threshold is 18 and with some kind of a high school credential. But we both see this as a win-win because as every once in a while, Joe and or maybe Glow through Joe will send out a request for how many people are actually working with either a reentry or a ex-offender population.
Mm-hmm.
And we have noticed in our population just how that representation has been increasing.
Yes.
And we, so to the extent that we have been successful in that arena, this partnership also gives us the extra support services because this other organization really looks after the housing and some of the, you know, the really intensive life skills.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, you know, something that, you know, we have actually, this is a kind of partnership that we've hoped for. So we're looking towards that as a partnership that also, not only an operational partnership, but it also brings a little bit of leveraged funds with it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Now, Paula,
yeah.
Has JFY, originally Jobs for Youth, which is interesting. You've evolved, but
yep.
JFY has been there. You've been with us so much.
1998.
Same thing.
Yes. Yeah.
And similar to New Jersey Youth Corps, you've kind of been in and out of the program, and there have been you've been out and years you've been in. And what it shows to those who are new entries or under their first cycle, there is life beyond. This is not the type of grant where you get it once and you never get it again.
Right.
But there's also the type of grant that you may get it once, and there's no guarantee that you'll get it forever.
Yeah. That's right.
So
that's true.
Yes.
I just wanted to, if I can just say something to George, a friend of mine who's from New Jersey. She's from New Jersey, and she's kind of considering, she's been in Massachusetts for like 20 years, but she's actually thinking now, her parents are getting older, and she's thinking about going back to New Jersey. But we were just talking last night about what great things come out of New Jersey, but in the particularly in the environmental and energy area, and government leadership. We were you know, we did a little love fest for Cory Booker. But really, I just want to, you know, we'll add you to that list of
really
impressed
that,
with the things that are coming out of New Jersey, the leadership on the environmental front. So.
Thank you so much.
Out for me.
That's great. Thanks,
New
Paul.
New Jersey has an excellent regional office, very concerned about the environment. They seem to be very proactive.
Yes.
And then they've got people like George, and of course, Boston's fortunate to have a group like JFY, which is you've been basically now again, you get funds from many sources. Mm-hmm. First time I visited JFY, they were not getting any public funding. It was all from private
sources.
Yeah,
it's all private. We're getting hardly any, no public money to speak of.
Mm-hmm.
Well, or to speak that much of. That Department of Labor money is the other organization. I mean, we are a subcontractor on that Department of Labor grant, so.
Mm-hmm.
Which
yeah,
is
so
fine,
get,
but it comes in as fee income as opposed to.
Yeah, that can be difficult money to work with if you're talking about Work Investment Act dollars. We try to stay away from WIA dollars. There's just so many strings attached to that.
I totally agree. It makes it very difficult for
yes.
you to.
Yeah.
For instance, if we did use local WIA funds, we would have to restrict our population to just residents of the city of Boston.
Correct. So we try to go after. No, there's money out there that's discretionary dollars that can be spent pretty much the way we want on the program. And we have a great track record, so people know the money's going to be spent wisely.
Yes.
Now here's two very interesting programs. George has gotten a lot of discretionary, but a lot of state support, a lot of local public money support, not federal WIA type things. And now Paul and JFY, they've gotten an incredible amount of foundation dollars.
That's great.
Is that correct? That you really has been your, you've come this. For you, it's actually been foundation, and then the public money has kind of been ancillary to the private money you've raised over these years.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. Which is very interesting, and I think a tremendous lesson for anyone doing job development that there is tremendous potential for private money. And anyone who's been up to see JFY facilities, they're beautiful. I mean,
yes.
You're two blocks from the from the governor's office down there in the historic area.
That's a great location.
Well,
I can
the
see
other
the
thing
governor's
about
office
that is
from my window. Yeah.
What I would say about that is that look not just at the core of what you're doing, but look at, if you're approaching foundations, at the populations that you serve and those characteristics, because that's really where you can get at the heartstrings of the foundations. I just picked up another funder who was just fascinated with trying to solve the problem of how do you get folks who are coming, who have criminal backgrounds into the job market in a meaningful way.
This is a very big year for working with ex-offenders, I believe. I know talking
and veterans
to OAI,
too, I believe, if I can just interject.
Yes. I think OAI was talking about working with Leavenworth, and what they're talking about is getting people who are scheduled to be released in 6 months and getting them into a program and then using resources at the prison and actually setting up a training program in the prison. So when the people are released, they actually can be released into jobs with credentials.
That's a great way to do it.
I don't know if they're going to be able to pull this off. They're talking about it. And, of course, you could leverage resources from DOJ and from the prison itself.
Yes.
Which I think if something like that works, could set a very interesting model for prisons all over.
No, I agree. Often we've worked with reentry, not with brownfields, but I know, and Paul, I know you're aware of this too. There's various federal programs with tax credits.
Yes.
And we use those with some of our at-risk youth too in placements. And also with the ex-offenders, there's our Department of Labor has a bonding program.
Really?
I think it's $30,000 or $40,000. That doesn't cost anything. All the employers have to do is ask for it.
Really?
I'm going to look. So this is through your state or through your county?
This is through our state. I mean, we have one stops, like I'm sure you do, employment offices, and they have availability to these bonds. Now, what's surprising is I would think that would be used a lot, but in New Jersey, they don't can use 40 a year. So we're part of my office, we're out there trying to draw up some business for that.
Now, this is incredible. So if you contacted your local Department of Labor, now
mm-hmm.
this may or may not be something that's particular to New Jersey, but maybe
yes.
not. We need to find
I'll
out.
Be looking into it.
Mm-hmm.
And
that
yeah,
like hiring
well.
An ex-offender a little more attractive. If...
Oh, tremendously attractive.
Yes.
And so it's an indemnity bond for the
yes.
employer.
Correct.
Issued through Department of Labor or through some
probably
insurance
through the,
company?
Probably through the state of New Jersey, I would think,
mm-hmm.
in my case.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Very interesting. That would be a great help because
mm-hmm.
That is one of the issues that is of concern to potential employers.
Yes.
But both of you, you really have done really an excellent job in defining your target populations. And, of course, one of the things we'll get into as soon as this RFP is out and we start
mm-hmm.
talking about sustainable programs, the community interaction that you both have is incredible, and of course the needs assessment, which we'll
mm-hmm.
get into later, is
yes.
is also you've got a good feel on jobs, and
yes.
and I know George, you've had a lot of experience with this, and we've talked about this at other
mm-hmm.
calls of this whole issue of weatherization. There's
yes.
there may be a tendency for new grantees to jump into clean jobs, weatherization type thing. I think you've sounded in the past a word of caution for anyone that's thinking of doing this. Is that correct?
Yes, I have. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that they'd be, if anyone thinks about doing weatherization, make sure there are a lot of HUD programs. There's been a lot of money thrown at training
mm-hmm.
and maybe not so many jobs in some states. Some states have more than others, but
yes,
some states there are no jobs.
No,
yeah,
that's true.
I would second that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had, I think it was 4 years ago, we had gotten $1 million in a grant. We went out and we bought 4 sets of weatherization equipment, the blower doors, the combustion gas analyzers, the insulation blowers, and we had 4 crews from our programs, you know, going out and doing energy audits and weatherization. And our hopes were always that we could develop a fee-for-service with them. And one of our sites finally did take off with that. And
mm-hmm.
The other 3, we're still doing it locally for nonprofits, but it's a good experience for our crews, but we're really not making any money at it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's something that we thought we caught that green wave early on.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
but it just never materialized.
No, are you doing any weatherization training now?
Yes, we are.
Oh,
yes.
So you are still doing some, though.
Yes. Yeah, we have over 11 sites. We have what's
mm-hmm.
called Energy Ambassadors, where
mm-hmm.
we have a trainer, Carl. He'll go
mm-hmm.
out and work with the young people to mm-hmm. talk to them, explain to them what they can do in their own homes
mm-hmm.
to save energy.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have some of our groups are trained to go out and talk to school children and senior citizens and other people within their neighborhoods about what they can do on their own to save energy. And then the second component was our Energy Action Core. And those are the ones actually going out and doing energy audits and weatherization jobs. And we really only have one that's still very, very active. And they're doing a lot of work right now at the City of Newark. They're making enough money to sustain the crew, the crew leader
mm-hmm.
and the crew, which is good.
No.
So they're pretty much paying for themselves.
Yeah. So the take-home story is, and what we'll be focusing on in the future
mm-hmm.
PLCs here, is our environmental jobs.
Yes.
Energy jobs might be an ancillary thing, but
mm-hmm.
should not necessarily be the core of the program.
No.
And so those
maybe one day, but not right now. One
yeah.
savings we do have with our 11 buildings throughout New Jersey, we did do energy audits and we weatherized all of our buildings. And we're seeing a third year going into it, we're seeing a tremendous savings. As far as heating and air conditioning costs. So.
It's not that it's not a worthy cause.
It's a very worthy cause, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, we try to keep these to 30 minutes. I really appreciate the experience and mentoring that Paula from JFY and George from New Jersey Youth Corps brought, and they've been in these programs since the beginning and have been not only sustainable with public money, but without public money. So it's great to have you on. Now, I'm sure between now and February 8th, which will be the next call, Wednesday at 2 p.m., we will have this
we'll
RFP.
Know something.
Now, EPA
That's
is also
going to...
That's
what we're hoping anyway.
We're hoping. And now EPA is going to also have some calls. They basically go through a PowerPoint, and they'll talk to you about the subchapters, subparts, and all the procedurals. We will be focusing on the backstory of how how we go about constructing these programs that might lead into a good needs assessment or might lead into a good partnership or how to start an advisory committee. They'll be talking about an EPA workshops. They'll be talking about you're going to get 15 points for doing community action, and we're going to talk about more what does it take to get involved in the community.
Together,
so,
so
when you see all the different workshops, that's kind of the focus we're going to be in. We'll be staying informal like today. So I want to thank everyone for coming on the call today, we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, one last thing.
Not being able to make more calls.
That's every time is great. And if you haven't gotten a letter from me directly, and I know George and I think and Paula is on that list, but email msenew@aol.com, and we'll make sure you get announcements of not only when the RFP comes out, but also post session notes and announcements of the calls. So
terrific.
Okay. Well, thanks, everyone, and you all have a good week.
Mike,
thank you. You too.
Talk to you soon. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye.